You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
The Fourth Line Podcast in partnership with Last Word on Sports. This is August 15th, 2016. With you today is myself, Carl, and the always wonderful Joel is here as well. Joel, today's a big day.
It is.
Yeah. It is the day that we officially booked Seattle 3.0.
It is happening. It's going to be hip hop happening. Just like our new intro music.
Yeah.
And it is, what, 2 months away? 3 months away?
2 months from now, we will be watching your Seattle Seahawks versus someone else's Atlanta Falcons.
Actually 2 months from tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. So when you're probably listening to this, because people don't listen to podcasts in the middle of the night, do they?
No. We'll get this up early. But those East Coasters, maybe a little bedtime Fourth Line Podcast, fall asleep to the sweet sounds of Carl and Joel.
Yeah. So much sweetness here.
That's what we aim for. Well,
do we aim for anything? I didn't realize we aimed for stuff.
We have some goals, dreams. The thing is, we aim, oftentimes we miss.
I always thought we were like the Rico Fada of
podcasts. That's your go-to, eh?
That's my go-to. Huh. Did you know how good Rico Fada was supposed to be? I don't even know if I'm saying that right.
I think you are. Yeah.
Okay. He is 36 years old.
Wow. So if he had a panned out, his career would have just been wrapping up.
Yeah. Oh, he's probably better than we are.
Oh, without a doubt, he's better than we are.
He's scored 27 goals in the NHL. He scored 36.
That's the AHL you're looking at there.
He scored 16 goals.
Yeah, 27 career NHL goals.
He scored 16 goals 1 year for the Pittsburgh Penguins and yet managed to go minus 46. Not that I'm saying, like, I understand Carl hates plus minus and da 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 da. But still, to go minus 46.
Yeah, minus 46 is bad, no matter how you look at it. 34 points minus 46, not exactly the best of seasons.
So, you're welcome, Hockey World. This is what we have to talk about in the summer because there's nothing to talk about. So, we're talking about Rico Fada.
Yeah.
He was like a hot prospect once.
He was. Should we quit now?
Probably.
See what I did there? Because someone else quit this week, Joel. Mr. Patrick Waugh.
Did he quit? Are we sure he quit? Or
I believe that he legitimately did quit, yes.
Or was it a mutual? Was it a little mutual? Did he get pushed out to the point where he quit?
I definitely think that he got pushed out to the point that he quit. Maybe not intentionally, but he was coach, but also vice president of hockey operations. And by the time he was done, he was only coach. They hadn't officially removed that title, but from all rumors this week and all, no one's really said a lot and you don't know what's going on, but it appears he wasn't involved at all in the Tyson Berry negotiations or conversation. He said that the team and him had different visions for what they wanted. So it sounds like he kind of, if you put the pieces together, he wanted to blow this team up this summer. Joe Sakic said, we've got a good team here. Let's not do anything crazy. He got upset about it and said, you know what? I'm gone.
How do you feel about this, Carl?
Great.
See, unless like the only thing that I could think of, so like I went one of two ways. Okay. The first thing that I thought was something happened in his life. Like he got cancer or like a loved one was sick and so he just quit for personal reasons. Which in that case, you don't want to be happy.
No.
But it doesn't sound like that's the case. Because, like, it's really late in the year to be quitting.
Absolutely.
Like, this is a horrible – that's the downside, is that you are probably in for a bit of a tough go this year.
I think this season will obviously, with a different coach, with the same – essentially the same group as last year. I think, 2 weeks ago, I said when we re-signed Tyson Berry that – I was concerned because we still have the same group of people. Patrick Waugh is still the coach and something's got to change. Now it has. We're going to see what a different coach can do, depending on who's brought in, and but we can touch on that.
Are you going to get a different coach?
If we sign Bob Hartley, we will get a worse version of Patrick Waugh. So yes. No, we don't. I do not desire Bob Hartley. That's a name that's come about a lot. Obviously, his ties being a former coach of the team.
That's not a good tie, though.
Well, I think, if anything, the fact that Patrick Waugh has a legacy with the team makes it less likely that they're going to bring someone in just because of legacy, just because right. They've been with the team. So Bob Hartley, Mark Crawford, both guys without NHL jobs, both guys arguably willing to take an NHL coaching job, both been with the Avalanche before. I think that you look at the Patrick Waugh situation and say, well, he's a guy who was with the team before. Bring him back. Maybe not.
Of those two, who would you want more?
Crawford.
Of the available coaches, who do you want most?
I wish for no one really. Like, that's the thing. Everyone signed, right? There's no one who any of these 30 teams were like, you know who we'd rather? This guy. So they went out and got him. I would have loved, obviously, Boudreau. I started looking through the list of some of the guys available and was reminded Mike Yeo ended up in St. Louis as the heir to Ken Hitchcock. Dave Cameron is in Calgary as an assistant coach. So these are guys recently NHL coaches not available. For me, I'd like to go junior coach or something internal. They've said that they're not going to go internal, but like who, even a junior team, who's going to give them permission to interview a coach when camp opens up in a, 3-4 weeks?
Everyone, because you can't, a junior coach, you have to let them interview for the job because that's just like the unwritten rule about coaching is that if you don't say no unless it's as long as it's not a parallel step, you can't say no.
Even at this point in the season, you've made all your plans. They're
dude,
now left in the exact situation.
Dude, coaches interview for head coaching jobs in the NFL the week before the Super Bowl.
Yes.
So why would...
But he's not leaving. If he accepts that, he's not like, all right, see ya. Screw you guys.
But
like,
he's going to... That's a terrible time to be like messing with that kind of stuff. Here's where I'm going. There's two guys. I believe it's going to be one of these two guys, regardless of your junior take.
Okay.
I think it's going to be Travis Green or Dallas Eakin.
I've heard a lot of... people spec not a lot. I've seen you almost any coach has been rumored. Travis Green obviously was a big, there was a lot of people who thought Calgary might go with him. I'd be fine with that. Dallas Eakin, you've got that, you're, as you put it, the Edmonton stink on him.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think if I'm a Colorado Avalanche fan, I want Travis Green. That's what I want.
I'm fine with Travis Green. I'm not sure because teams do have the right to say, no, you can't interview right now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that he's going to get permission to interview. That's the only thing. I don't think
But isn't it, how does that work? Isn't it like different leagues and stuff? I don't know how that works. It'd be interesting to know how this works because the AHL is not the NHL. And I think like coaches and like staff are actually hired by that team, not by the junior team. I don't know. Maybe like, or maybe it's not. I don't know. I'd be interested. I don't think because like the Canucks, it's Utica where Travis Green is. The Canucks can't just call up Travis Green and be like, okay, you're a new NHL coach. Like they'd actually have to like sign him to a contract, I believe.
Right.
They can't just be like, well, we're moving you up. It's not, so it's not the same as players. So I don't know how that works, but.
Yeah. If they're going to give him permission again, late August, if they're willing to let him interview, I'm sure he'd be interested and interview. Avalanche said they're not going to go internal. I think that at this point, they might be stuck with an internal guy, and I'm fine with that. There's been, you know, Tim Armey's been with the organization for 5 years. I'd be fine with him taking over.
Or Mark Crawford. Like
of the retread NHL coaches, Mark, that's like a veteran. I wouldn't consider Dallas Eakins to be a, certainly he is a repeat NHL coach, but Mark Crawford would be the guy that I'd be more okay with, especially over Bob Hartley. If they were like, well, we want one of these two, Crawford all day. And it's hard to say this. Obviously a coach doesn't want it, but if they could sign someone to a 1 year deal and then reevaluate the situation after 1 year, that's an ideal thing for me too.
Well, interesting. I was just reading up about Mark Crawford, just seeing where he's at, and the site that I'm on, they had something you might be interested in, and then it was like players to watch during the KHL crisis, and then so I started to read it, and it was about how the KHL was going to fold and how all these guys were coming back. 2014. So apparently it didn't happen.
No,
because these guys are still in the KHL on this list.
I am glad that this time you checked the date on that article, though.
Yeah, I'm good. I just
we're learning.
It's hilarious. I was like this is in the like. How is it worded? You may also like this current news. That is the heading that this was under. So it's a little bait and switch right there.
Yeah, not the same.
They got my click.
Yeah, so Colorado Avalanche, I think in a better situation, even if this year they're just sorting through things, Waugh's contract was up, it leaves them in a situation where they don't have to fire him. He can still, I think 3 years down the road, unless he takes another job, which there's, I think everyone in Montreal wants Michel Therrien out. I don't think they're going to get anything better with Patrick Waugh, but good luck if you do. I think if he stays out of NHL coaching and goes back, even if he goes back to junior, if he goes back to the team that he was with before, or a different situation, I think his legacy as a great goalie stands, and you don't remember Patrick Waugh as a terrible coach.
Oh, whatever. I think you probably do remember him as a terrible coach.
No.
Maybe not a terrible player. You remember him as a terrible coach.
If you ask, is Patrick Waugh a good coach, you would remember him as terrible. But Gretzky, terrible coaching situation, terrible tenure. No one thinks Wayne Gretzky, bad coach. They think Wayne Gretzky, great player. So his legacy will not be as a failed coach.
Maybe.
No.
I don't know. This doesn't help.
So,
maybe, I don't know. I'm not a bit like, I think you're just trying to say that so you feel better about the situation, because you don't want to remember Patrick Waugh, the terrible coach. You want to remember Patrick Waugh, I've got Stanley Cups.
So you honestly think that 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, in a decade, we're sitting here, August 15th, 2026, Patrick Waugh has not coached a single additional game in the league, and someone says, man, Patrick Waugh was really good, you'll be like, no, he's not, he was a terrible coach.
Who am I having this conversation with?
Right, okay, me, you'll throw that back in my face. Anyone else? And literally, if we hadn't had this conversation, now that we've had this, it's like, put that in your mind for forever so it doesn't count.
That's your own fault. You're the one that brought up legacy. I didn't. I don't know. Probably, sure. It doesn't matter. Patrick Waugh has proven that he's not, like, sure, great player. Yeah, terrible coach. Everything, every situation that he's been in makes me wonder, like, what kind of person he is.
I refrain from commenting on that.
Yet you hate Martin Brodeur.
It's, his personal reasons are much different.
I just want to know. Like, I'd be interested to sit down and be like, and have dinner with Patrick Waugh. And just, I would go in there expecting that he's, I got the feeling he's not, like, the greatest person to hang out with.
Well, you, his anger issues are not a hidden facet of him. Like, we've seen him blow up on the ice, behind the bench.
But I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Isn't, like, hey, in the NHL world, like, Patrick Waugh's got to be in your top five dinner guests, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, isn't that just, that's who I would go with. Because, like, the guy is, like, he just seems so out there and yet so interesting. I don't know. I'd love to have dinner with that
guy. And an open book. He doesn't, like, if you were to sit down, I'm sure he'd dish on a number of things.
Yeah. Like, me and him would probably just slam on the Habs together. Awesome.
That's very true.
Like, we would just love it. So, I don't know. I do think you're probably right, but this is not the same as Gretzky. Because Gretzky, by all accounts, like, no one's sitting there being like, nah, I don't know if Gretzky's a nice guy. That kid is, like, loved by, like, especially Canada.
But
like, no one's like, yeah.
But this hasn't, to me, his coaching hasn't changed my opinion of him as a person. It hasn't.
It's enhanced it for me.
So it's more solidified who you think he is as a person.
Yeah, don't you think?
No, because I knew who he was as a person before he took this job. Like, it hasn't changed for me since then. Like, when his very first game, he was pushing on that glass, yelling at Bruce Boudreau, I wasn't like, oh, look at, this is so out of character for Patrick Waugh. No, I knew exactly that that's the kind of player he was on the ice and coach that he'd been in junior.
See, and that's the thing. I think that hurts his legacy. By just showing us more of that, it hurt his legacy. Because people like to remember, they want, like, you like the hero. You like the guy who is a great player, great guy, signed the autographs for the kids, the community loved him. You just don't get that feeling. Yeah, Waugh was great, but, like, you just, he just continues to, it was just more years of us showing he really only cares about himself.
Yeah, well, let's carry on. I don't think we're going to agree on this one, and that's very okay.
It's just because you love Patrick Waugh.
No, I, like, if you were to say the exact same thing about anyone else, I think that a small post-career portion of doing something else does not change it. It didn't change my opinion of him at all. Like, I don't think he's a better or worse person because of what I saw with him coaching. I don't think his legacy has anything to do with how he is individually. I think it's 100% him as a goaltender in the National Hockey League. And a little bit of, like, that fiery passion. If anything, the fiery passion he had off the ice adds to that part that people like or hate about him. I don't think that's changed at all.
Maybe. It's definitely changed. It's enhanced, which is, like, it's just made it more visible. So the people that hate him more now. The people that liked him, I don't know if you like him more. See, that's the thing. I don't. Maybe it was break even, but there was no positive. There definitely was a potential to be negative.
All right. Maybe. Anyways.
I think you're blinded by your Stanley Cup rings.
That's fine. There's two Stanley Cup rings blocking my eyes. I could care less.
So why didn't you just say that at the beginning of this conversation then? I love Patrick Waugh. He won me Stanley Cups. I don't care what
anyone thinks. Because that's also my opinion. Sure, you can say that I'm biased because of that, and to a degree I probably am, but I legitimately think unbiasedly that that's how I feel about his legacy.
I don't think you could have an unbiased conversation about Patrick Waugh.
Why didn't you say it that at the beginning?
I'm pretty sure I did. I'm pretty sure I've said multiple times that you can't talk clearly about this.
Okay. Well, Joel, why don't we carry on?
Oh, we should. Are we going to talk about Price?
Price?
Carey Price. You said Carey.
No.
Carry on.
No, we're not.
Oh, I thought that was a great segue. It was.
What do you want to talk about Carey Price?
I don't. I thought there was news about him or something.
No, there's nothing. Okay. Some other news. Jimmy Vesey, he becomes a free agent tomorrow.
Nobody cares. Next.
Right. The only reason I think you care is because we've seen more college players become relevant at the NHL level. A few years ago, I don't think this is relevant in the slightest. But do you think that this is the only thing that I think this brings up is a conversation of the changing way that players are taking control of their rights? We saw this with Austin Matthews going to Europe so that he couldn't be sent back to junior. We see Jimmy Vesey holding out within his rights. He's done nothing. This isn't like I'm signed to a contract, I'm holding out. No, this is 100% his right to do this. He's becoming a free agent. There's some other college guys are as well. Do you think we'll see more of these players doing this? I 100% think that we'll see more of this. How much will this change? Idea. Why?
Because it's going to be terrible for him.
He's going to end up exactly where he wants to.
Yeah, but he's also 23 and has yet to play any sort of level of professional hockey. Sure, we've seen more college guys, but this guy is like, he's 23 already and he's yet to play in any sort of professional. I think the EJHL, I don't even know what that is, was the last thing he's played in other than college. He's right. 23. This is, I don't want this guy. Like, sure, whatever. Like, there is zero risk to the team that signs him to his entry level deal.
Right.
But this was a terrible decision by him. Like, he got drafted by a team that is great at developing young players. So if he had just gone to Nashville, maybe he'd be in the NHL right now. Now he's going to be thrown into the AHL because no team's going to play him right away. I probably can't talk about this too unbiasedly because the Leafs signed Casey Bailey. But like, that's the thing. Like,
and Casey Bailey became nothing, really.
Who's the last guy that did this that's become something? That, like, I know that there are college guys who are becoming something, but who's the college guy that gave up the 3 years to his draft team, became a free agent, and became an NHLer?
That's fair. I can buy that. And again, the age factor, you have to look at, you know, he won the Hobey Baker this past year as a 23-year-old, whereas, you know, Jack Eichel, Johnny Gaudreau won it as much younger than he is. So, yeah.
What, 17, 18 years old?
Gaudreau was a little older. Because, like, Goudreau's 23 right now. I think he won it 2 years back.
But so. Eichel was 19.
Eichel was young, yeah.
So, like, this guy, whatever. I would not, like, this guy is not, like, would you be surprised if this guy doesn't make it?
No, I would not be, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a third liner. I would be most surprised if he was a first liner within the next 2 years.
I will be surprised if he's in the NHL in 2 years. Like, at all. It just doesn't, you're going to tell me playing the last 4 years at Harvard was great for a 23-year-old's development? No. He's playing with 18-year-olds. Like, there's a difference between what he did and way different than what Austin Matthews did.
Oh, definitely. They're different situations, 100%.
Yeah. Austin Matthews went and played with adults.
At 18 years of age.
At 18, yeah. Spent a year there and is now going to be in the NHL this fall. Like, it's just... So I can see more people than Austin Matthews did. I think everyone's going to look at Casey Bailey and Jimmy Vesey and realize, you know what? We shouldn't do this.
Yeah. I think that things can change with players taking more into their hands, especially if they're stuck in college. But
and that being said, this is a zero risk move. So any whoever signs him, I love it.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. Because there are guys all the time that surprise us and are better than they should be, and so he could be like, hey, if he becomes a star in this league, I'll be completely surprised. But someone got him for nothing.
It's very true. Well, Joel, that is the news of the week. But now we have a very exciting conversation. Earlier this week, I sat down with Adam Scorgi, producer of the upcoming documentary Ice Guardians. And why don't we take a listen to that? All right, everyone, we are back, and today with us we have Adam Scorgi, producer of the Ice Guardians documentary coming out this fall. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why don't we start just with a little bit about the movie, the film. What is Ice Guardians all about?
Ice Guardians is a feature doc looking at the history and role of the NHL enforcer, its evolution in the game, and really kind of solidifying its place in hockey history. I mean, whether you agree with fighting in hockey or not, the part that is unarguable is that fighting in hockey is a huge part of the game's history, and the players that filled those roles for their teams need to be honored just like any other player on the team. And that was always the intention of Ice Guardians.
So you went just to get the stories? Was that kind of your mission in putting this together?
Not the mission, just I had gone to high school with Scott Parker and Todd Fedorik, and really just like I knew them in high school and they were hanging out, and then I also knew the personas they came, and then eventually, you know, the legendary figures in the NHL. And I just knew there's so much more to the role and to these guys than what the media portrayed. So as a filmmaker, I'd looked out and seen what else had been done out there, and there have been some great comedies and stuff like that, but you know, and then there's the Knuckles Nyland project, Last Gladiators, which focused on him, but nothing that I felt really did the guys justice and looked at the history of how the role started. Why was fighting so prevalent in hockey versus other sports? How did it evolve over the years with the rule changes? And who are the guys that, you know, became legends in their markets? You know, as I was traveling, you'd go to all these markets and sure, you'd see their star players, but me, as I confess to be an Edmonton Oilers fan, unfortunately, you know, even with all the legendary players there, Gretzky and Curry, Messier and Coffey, one of the most popular jerseys to this day is Dave Semenko and Marty McSorley. And why is that? So I wanted to go and tell that story. And I found that was an incredibly tough thing to do because the NHL doesn't want to talk about it. And the players themselves, a lot of them have been very wronged by the media in interviews many times and made out to look like dummies that didn't belong in the game. But as I kept interviewing guys and was asking the right questions and really wanted to hear their story, then it just opened up to where I say me and my team are now in probably one of the most elite brotherhoods in all sports, is that we have become dear friends with a lot of the guys in the movie. And when they make a phone call to other players and teammates, the teammates jump to come to help.
Well, and definitely you guys had a lot of great fighters and enforcers of current day, some older guys as well. Who are some of the guys that you managed to get their takes on the role of fighting in hockey?
Well, it's fascinating because there's, like you said, we have different generations, right? So we have Dave the Hammer Schultz, obviously. And if you look at him and, you know, the Broad Street Bully days, it's very different, you know, even to when Dave Semenko played, which was the tail end of each other's careers, right? They overlapped and you know, by then rules had changed and instigator rule had come in and things like that. So, I mean, there's so many great interviews in the film, but we got great perspectives from Kevin Westgarth for current guys, George Parros, Scott Parker, Kevin Westgarth, Luke Gazdick, older guys, Nick Fatiu, Dave the Hammer Schultz, Dave Semenko, Joey Kosher, Kelly Chase. And then we also got superstars perspectives like Wendell Clark, Brett Hall, Jerome McGinley, And then we also got like linesmen. And then we also went deeper and got like a human behavior specialist and a criminologist to look at why was the very first sanctioned NHL game ended in a bench clearing brawl? Why is it that in all the contact sports, fighting is just more prevalent and has been since the game started? What is it about human behavior that drives that? And then looking at the evolution to where, you know, you got to the late 80s, early 90s, and into the late 90s where you had that quote-unquote enforcer and guys really got really big and were trained fighters. And that's kind of like the, you know, the Parker generation and Peros and Westy and those guys. But it has been a fascinating journey, and I couldn't be more proud of the way the film's turned out. I really think it's something that the players are going to love, and I can't wait to release it this fall.
Well, and definitely, I think at this time where you see a decline, obviously, in fighting the NHL and lawsuits happening with player safety, things like that, a documentary like this, this is the time to show it, to put this out and get some of these stories out there to see a different side. Because like you mentioned, to me, when you think of a guy who defies the stereotype, George Peros is that guy. Like, he is, from what I've heard, a brilliant mind and a guy who really gets all aspects of what's going on here. Granted, he fights as well, but that's not entirely him. And I think being able to get those stories from these guys is going to be a real opportunity for everyone, not just, you know, the fighters to have their stories heard, but for people to have an example or a, you know, just an understanding of what's happening.
You're bang on. And I mean, Kevin Westgarth is another great example of that, a Princeton grad with a degree in psychology, right, who's now working for the NHL. You know, he steals the show. He's brilliant in the film. Like, he is so well-spoken and intelligent. And you're bang on. Actually, from the reviews from people that aren't hockey fans that have had, like, our legal team and our sound mix and everything, that has been the biggest thing, which is always the goal of the director, Brett Harvey, and I, is that we wanted people to see what we had discovered on this journey, that these aren't the brutal thugs that you would see when you see them on the ice, and really see how the team reacts to them. That was fascinating for us, that other than maybe your captain or your star player, next to him in the locker room, where we were allowed with cameras many times, which is very rare. It's become more common now with HBO 24/7 and stuff. But we were allowed in there to see, and the way that the team reacts when their team enforcer comes in is, it's like the captain. They all stand. They're all patting him on the back. Like Westgarth puts it in the film, is that a lot of the times teams are getting an enforcer on their team, not just for the fighting and the physical element, but they want that behavior where this guy is willing to do whatever it takes to make his dream in the NHL come true. If that means putting his head through the wall for his team, he will do it. And coaches and management want that, because that's what wins championships, is a team that's willing to stick up and be there for each other. And a lot of the times they want that. You know, they say to like their superstar players, if you had one-tenth of his heart with your talent, you would be in the Hall of Fame. But you've got, as we all know, in all sports, you got some of these uber-talented guys that are lazy, that once they sign a big contract, they don't care anymore. It was always about the money for them and not about the passion. And that kind of the element, you know, is what and most of the guys in the film hope that, you know, with the decline of fighting and the decline of the enforcers, that you still try to find that role player in the evolution of the game, someone that still brings that element to the table. And, I mean, you're still kind of seeing that. Again, I confess to being an Oilers fan, but you look at how many people were after Milan Lucic this year, right? Every team wanted a player like that, a player that's willing to play gritty, fight for his teammates, do whatever it takes, block a shot, finish his checks. That's something that I feel in the game is slipping away, and I hope you don't, as I say, that you don't lose that passion and commitment that these guys brought to their teams, because that's the part that's really overlooked. But I got off on a tangent there, as I do, because I'm very passionate about this, as you can see. But the people that had watched the rough cut and stuff so far, the biggest compliment we got from people that aren't even hockey fans were that they were like, wow, I had no idea that there was that dynamic in hockey. Fascinating, end to end. I had no idea that these guys were those kind of people.
Well, and with them learning it, was there something that kind of you set out to do this project, something that you learned that you didn't expect to going through this?
Kind of what I said there is just how the team respects them. Like, it was, you don't think of it because, you know, you want your team to win and you're looking at the superstars, the number one draft picks, and, you know, unless you really follow this role, you kind of like, yeah, who cares if he's gone? But I'm telling you, the player, they fight hard. I mean, recently with, when Gazdik got the deal with New Jersey, they said they were looking for a tough player, and they talked to Taylor Hall, and they're like, what's he like? And he's like, awesome guy. Awesome to have in the dressing room. I'd love it if you brought him to New Jersey. Right? So then they talked to Gazdik, and, you know, like, there's that part I thought was really missed. Like, it's fascinating to see. I mean, we interviewed Brett Hall, and Brett Hall says on camera, he's like, if you like seeing Brett Hall score 741 goals, it's because I had guys like Kelly Chase and Tony Twist looking after me. I can tell you that right now. And I mean, it's hard to argue when you're some of the people that say, oh, I don't buy it. The tough guys make players feel like that. I don't know. It's hard to argue one of the top 10 leading goal scorers of all time when he says, I would not be the player I was without those two. I'll tell you that right now.
And I think now we're going to see how much that actually is a thing in the current NHL as fighting starts to decline. How much space some of these star players have when there's not a guy on the team whose role is to defend him, to give them that space that they need, right? It'll be interesting.
We'll have I'm going to give another spoiler in the film, but we have another great and tough guy that says in the film, he says, you can tell me till you're blue in the face that finding guys and that stuff's going to work, but I can tell you when I played, I already knew what the fine was for running Steve Yzerman. It was Joey Kosher and Bob Probert, and I didn't do it. And I didn't let anybody on my team do it because I knew ultimately I was going to be the guy that was going to have to pay the price for those actions. It's like, and I have seen Sidney Crosby in a season get crunched more times than Gretzky in a career. So you can tell me that fighting has nothing to do, like, you can't tell me that fighting, like, and then we have Hockey Fights put it in a way, puts it very, really good, both sides, where he says, listen, we can't say that Crosby gets hit as much as he does because there is a lack of fighting, but you can't say that it isn't either, because it kind of is what the rules are going, and people go after him in a way that they just didn't go after Gretzky, Yzerman, and Hall and those guys. They just didn't.
For sure. So when you started this, were you a fan of fighting? Did you support it? And do you like it more? Are you more a fan of it in the game?
I definitely was a fan. I'd grown up watching. That's what actually got me back into hockey, because I played hockey when I was really young, growing up in Edmonton. Then I moved overseas. I moved to Australia and Singapore, and I totally fell out of hockey and could care less. Didn't watch it when I came back to Canada. Didn't care about the games. And then the Rockets went to my high school, and then one of my buddies, Vic Baines, was like, hey, you should come to the Rockets game. I'm like, oh, whatever. And then he was like, hey, no, there's lots of girls there and stuff in your high school. So I was like, oh, sweet, chick. So we'll go. And then Parker and Fedorik were playing, and I watched, and they started fighting, and I was learning about this, and my buddy Vic was explaining the dynamic. Oh, well, they're down right now, so he's trying to spark the team, and he's trying to, and I was like, whoa, all this stuff is allowed? I was fascinated from then on, and then I later became friends with Parker and Fedorik. And yeah, I became a fan, and you know, it's what brought me back to hockey. And now I watch religiously every game for my team, which has been very painful over the last 10 years. But I'm still a fan. I still think it has a place in the game, and I'd still like to see fighting in the game. But I understand if the game evolves, and that's kind of where Ice Guardians goes, is that, you know, if the game evolves and says enforcers and fighting is no longer needed, at least this film is made to honor their place in hockey history.
Well, and do you think, again, don't want to give away too much of the film, but do you think most of the guys that you talked with are still in favor of it being a part? Obviously, they lose, some of them have lost their jobs because of the change in rules and direction away from that, but in general, they're in favor of fighting still being a place?
Oh, almost. We actually bring up the players themselves in the film. Out of the 40, we did 42 interviews. I think 35 were players, and almost all of them still believe it. And all of them would suit up tomorrow if they could. Now, of course, now it's great that we're much more cognizant of concussions. We actually recognize them as brain injuries. A decade ago, they were not considered a brain injury and stuff like that. But the big bad boogeyman that the media, and this kind of goes with, you know, the decline of fighting and everything, is that currently, right now, 95% of concussions do not come from fighting. They come from body checks and the speed of the game that everybody's so in love with. The speed of the game is the big bad boogeyman that nobody wants to answer, the fundamental part of the game that's causing the majority of the injuries. But that's a much harder thing to look at. So the easy scapegoat right now is, well, the fighting, they're punching each other in the head. This is the big problem with hockey. but it's actually doing a big disservice to the game, not looking that the bigger part of the game is what's causing the injuries. You have stronger, physically athletic players that are going faster ever since we opened the game up with the two-line pass, and now you also have them wearing bigger protective padding. I'll tell you this, 90% of the guys that we interviewed are way more scared of an open ice hit than they are of dropping the gloves. Because as Wendell Clark puts it in the film, he says, at least when I drop the gloves, I'm making a willing choice as a grown adult to have a battle with another grown man that's willing to do it. We are both shaking the gloves. You want to do it? You want to do it? We acknowledge it. He's like, if I come around my goal, you know, and I'm trying to make a pass and I'm not looking forward and some guy puts his chest in my shoulder and concusses me really bad and knocks me out for the season, well, I never agreed to that. He's like, I'd like to take my chances with the fight where I had a chance to agree to it first.
A big difference between, you know, an elbow to the head versus a fist in a willing, as Wendell put it, a willing match between two adults. So
it's between adult combatants that are, you know, and there's this statistic we bring up from CBC done in 2012 where they did a poll of 1,000 NHL players. And 98 or 99.8% of them thought fighting should stay. And I mean, you know, at what point do we listen to the players instead of trying to tell they're the ones taking all the risk, not us as the fans or as the professionals trying to tell them how to play? There's a reason why this like, I mean, if it was even close, like 40-60 or 50-50, but like 98 point, it's ridiculous stat. It's like there might have been two players that said no. So you have to look at that, right? We also looked at other leagues, right? We also, you know, interviewed the criminologist that followed a team in the UK and Swedish elite leagues. And she said she'd interviewed players that had played both. And the players felt way safer in the UK league where fighting was allowed, where the rules are much more like the NHL than they did in the Swedish league where there's no fighting. And here's the big misconception with concussions, because we also interviewed concussion specialists, is that everybody thinks a concussion has to come from a direct blow to the head. Very incorrect. All it takes is a jarring of the neck and head, or the jiggle, they call it, where you get a jiggle in the skull, which can come from a body check that there's no contact to the head. You can get a check right to your chest, ribs, side of your body, and as long as your head snaps and your brain jiggles, that will cause a concussion. So you don't, you can, according to the NHL rules right now, or pro hockey rules, a clean body check can cause a massive concussion, and it's not a dirty play. As long as you are not coming off your skates and you're skating towards a guy and it's not more than a couple steps for charging and you lay your shoulder into his chest and you snap his head back and give him a severe concussion, which could have lifelong repercussions, that's legal. And there's nothing another team can do about that, especially now with the decline of fighting.
Absolutely. And there is definitely still a lot to be learned, as in the, probably the last decade, concussion research and information about it, as we understand the fact of what, you know, CTE is, and the fact that you mentioned this is a brain injury, not just a concussion. It's not a headache that you have. There's more to it than that. And as we,
yes,
as we figure out what that means and how they're caused, I think you could see some tasks being taken to cut down on that speed so that you don't have the jarring hits. Because definitely there are a lot of ways. Can you get a concussion from a punch to the face? Yes. Can you get one from a clean shoulder to shoulder check at center ice? Absolutely. So
yeah, no, you're exactly right. And here's a part in a film that surprised us. I'm giving you lots of spoilers here, but Jeff Merrick said that he was doing an interview with Brad May, and he was like, hey, Mayday, what's the hardest you'd ever been hit? And he was expecting to hear like, oh, when I fought Bugard or when I fought Brashear or some crazy fight story. He's like, the hardest I'd ever been hit is when I accidentally turned into Matt Sundin's shoulder. And it was in a game, wasn't really that intentional. Matt's was just coming in to play the puck, and Brad May was knocked unconscious and woke up in the hospital. And that was the worst concussion and worst thing he'd ever had, was from a very, very, very minor accidental hit, shoulder to the chin. So, you know, these things where everyone, again, this is a great quote from the film, is that Jeff Merrick says, he's like, when people say they love the speed of the game now more than ever, he says, that's great if that's your thing. But he's like, I always ask them this. If you love the speed of the game the way it is right now, how strong these guys are and how fast they are, you have to ask yourself how many concussions you're okay with. Because with how fast it is now, doesn't matter how many preventative measures you put in place, you're going to have massive concussions. It's just, so you cannot be going 30, 35 miles an hour and be as strong as as fit as these guys are with the equipment they're wearing and not have it. There's no way, unless you eliminate hitting.
Well, and I think we all got a good glimpse into what that is with the Gabriel Landeskog piece on Player Tribune recently, yeah, where he talked about his concussion history and learning what, yep, that is. So, thanks for coming on,
great
Adam.
Piece. No, my pleasure. Actually, just a great point to that Landeskog thing. It kind of goes with the way the marketing towards the fighting has been. I can't remember what sports site it was, and I wouldn't name them even if it was, but something that was really interesting is one of them showed a picture of Gabriel Landeskog fighting when it did his concussion title, right? And I was like, hey, the guy's been in maybe two NHL fights, and that was like the headline picture they had for the article. And then when you read the article, what he's talking about, it was an open ice hit that he got. But that's the kind of marketing that, you know, cheap people, because it's clickbait, right? You see that, you think fighting. And I'm not saying, and this definitely to your listeners, I'm not saying you shouldn't be concerned about fighting and all that as well. The players definitely say the same thing. But to put all the onus only on them and not look at the greater overall picture of the game statistically, where the majority of concussions are coming from, is doing a great disservice to all the players.
For sure. Definitely need to look at all aspects of it. Adam, where can people find this movie? It's coming out this fall, but where can they go for more information and to eventually see it when it's released?
So it is going to be tickets for the Toronto premiere, which is going to be September 12th, Monday, September 12th at the Royal Theatre. During TIFF, they'll be on sale. You can check the Ice Guardians Facebook page or Ice Guardians Twitter. They'll be releasing with the press release, I think, later this week. They'll be $45, but it's free drinks all night. And we have seven Stanley Cup champions, four Hall of Famers, and 12 legendary enforcers attending the premiere, not to mention a whole whack of other red carpet personalities. So it's open to the public as well as the VIP. So I would suggest to follow our sites and get on that early next week, because those will be gone right away. And then it will be doing another event theatrical in Edmonton on September 15th, Kelowna the 29th, but then its world broadcast premiere will be on Super Channel in Canada October 8th. And then after that, we'll see how things go during TIFF to see, because we've got interest from a whole bunch of broadcasters, from HBO to Showtime. But then eventually it'll be releasing out across theaters in the United States in October, November, and it'll be in all the hockey markets, L.A., Boston, Minnesota, Chicago.
Awesome.
And then eventually, as the gamut of films go, it'll eventually be on iTunes and Hulu and Google Play and then Netflix and all the rest.
For sure. And definitely excited to see this. I know that you guys have been working on it for, over 2 years?
Ever.
Yeah.
No. 8 years.
Eight, wow.
It was 6 years to learn the battles of trying to get licensing and access to footage. And then once we finally figured out all that, then it was actually the actual production was 2 years, a year of shooting and then a year of editing.
Well, definitely you can tell the passion that you have, and it's going to be exciting to see what this actually, the stories that the enforcers have to tell. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for making this film. We look forward to seeing it this fall.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me babble.
That was great. Joel, there it is. Thanks to Adam for coming on, talking to us about his upcoming documentary. I think it'll be really interesting. Obviously, we touched on a lot of different aspects of the movie in that, but I think the most interesting thing to me is how they'll handle in the movie, and we'll see what actually happens when it comes out next month. Just the role of that in regards to safety. We touched on concussions and some of those things in there, but there's a lot of question marks about what actually causes concussions more and proper handling of it. Certainly, I'm glad that we're dealing with concussions better than ever before, but I'll be very interested to get some of those players, hear some of those players' opinions on what that is. And, you know, they have psychologists on there, and see how that the science backs up the players' opinions.
Yeah, I'm not sold on the idea that enforcers prevent stars from getting hit hard. I'm interested to see that perspective, especially from the players, like themselves saying, yeah, I want an enforcer on the ice with me. Like, I'm not. So, like, who is the enforcer on the Penguins this year? Did they have one?
Not that I can think of. That would be like the guy. Because even on like their fourth line, like they had Matt Cook as their center. That's not an enforcer.
Not definitely not anymore. Like, so what was lacking from that team? Like, just the enforcer is going away, and I'm interested to see why players think they need it, because it's clear that GMs and coaches don't think they need it. I remember the days of Brian Burke and Colton Orr and what's that guy's name? Ryan Holwig.
Yeah.
And then they did nothing for the Leafs. Like, those guys were just wasted space.
The checked out Penguins, and penalty minutes is the metric I'm using here. Chris Letang, first in penalty minutes.
But that's not enough.
Evgeny Malkin, number two. 66 penalty minutes. There was no one. No.
And that's the other thing. Like, and that was, it was interesting. And it's, like I said, it's way easier to have these conversations after. Like, I wasn't there for the interview, and I wouldn't have thought of these questions while he was there. But, like, I think it's like I was listening to it afterwards, and, like, what about that? Like, not having an enforcer keeps guys out of the box. Because those enforcers were taking what I would view as unnecessary penalties a lot of the times. So, how did that play into it? I imagine most of this is about fighting, but like enforcer, the idea wasn't just fighting. Like there was like protection on the ice too, kind of. So I don't know. I'm interested in taking a look at it. Cause I'm not convinced. I am in the not convinced the enforcer means anything anymore.
Yeah. I'll definitely be interested. I'm in of the opinion that less fighting means less injuries. And I don't have the numbers that back up, and we don't have old time numbers on concussions and things like that. And it's hard to get like X number of players got these numbers of concussions. So things have changed a lot. So it'll be interesting. I'm glad that there's going to be some players modern day, like you mentioned, like Jerome Iginla, and older players as well, to see kind of their all-encompassing thoughts on the state of fighting and enforcing in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
So that being said, Joel, let's go to our fourth line favorites bracket.
Do it up.
All right. So shall we start with the results of last week?
No, let's just go to the new one.
That seems ill-advised. It was kind of a rhetorical question. Work with me here, Joel.
I don't want to talk about last week.
Okay, so last week we went through Joel's Toronto Maple Leafs division, and these are the results. First matchup, the aforementioned Maple Leafs, Morgan Riley versus Aaron Ekblad. Aaron Ekblad takes it. The Battle of the Defensemen with 59% of the vote. Joel, are you going to use a veto on this?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. Can I decide? Can you give me a little time to decide on this?
Okay, but we'll go through the other three matchups. You have until then to decide.
Okay.
Okay, so the next one. Another one. Maybe you wish to veto this decision. Steven Stamkos versus Jack Eichel. Stamkos wins with 71% of the vote. Joel, do you wish to use your veto on that?
No, you should, though. It'll be hilarious. No,
I don't. I'd much rather Stamkos than Eichel.
Why don't you use it on Morgan Riley? How come you don't want to use your veto there?
Because they're about 50-50 for me. I think they're both good.
Okay.
Next up, the Detroit Red Wings. Dylan Larkin. His name's not Adam. That's not a thing. Dylan Larkin versus...
That's how people know him, though. They don't.
They're like, Larkin someone. Clearly, people are in favor because he defeated Carey Price 52-48.
Are you going to use your veto?
I am not going to use my veto on that.
Why not? You're saving it for later for Matt Duchene, probably.
Probably not, but you never know. And lastly, the Senators, Erik Karlsson, defeated Patrice Bergeron 75-25.
Thank goodness, America.
In a solid thing that I can agree with. The only one that I would have picked, I've picked Price over Larkin, but in a vote that...
You voted for Ekblad?
I do not recall actually voting in that one. So I don't think I voted in any of this week's polls.
So disappointed in you.
Yeah. I can. We can always pull it up and I can check and show you right now, but...
I don't care.
Okay.
I'm not going to use the veto.
No veto. Care. So Ekblad...
I don't like Morgan Riley, but... Ekblad's not going to win, and I don't think Morgan Riley's going to win. So
that's fair.
I'm not going to waste it on that.
So matchups for next round is Ekblad versus Stamkos, Larkin versus Karlsson.
Good choice by me.
Right. Maybe save that guy.
Goodbye, Ekblad. It was nice for a while.
So, Joel, now we are on to the second round. We're going to do the Western Conference this week, the Eastern Conference next week, and then quickly move to the finals.
All right.
So this week we have Jamie Benn versus Vladimir Tarasenko.
That's a great one. I don't even know what to say about that.
So this is when we start getting down. You know, we're down to 16 players. Who is your favorite? I'm going Jamie Benn.
I think I'd go Benn, but I don't know.
I like the physical side of his game. And Tarasenko didn't really show up in the playoffs, and that's left me with a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth.
Okay. Good to know. What's next?
Jonathan Toews versus Phil Kessel.
Yes.
I'm going Kessel on this one.
Of course you're going Kessel, because Kessel's the bomb.
He's continually made more and more fans as we've gone through the year.
People love Phil Kessel.
All right, so this is a less heavy hitter matchup now in the ones coming out of the Pacific Division. We have Connor McDavid versus both of the Sedins.
Ooh, the Sedins are probably going to lose.
Yeah, I'm going McDavid on this one.
I'm going to go with the Sedins. I love the Sedins.
It's your Vancouver bias there, though.
They're just such nice guys.
And that's all that matters, right?
Carl's just upset because what you didn't hear. So Carl did the interview with Adam for Ice Guardians last Monday.
Yeah.
It was a while ago. I listened to the interview earlier today, so I didn't have to listen to it now. So with the magic of podcasting, while you guys were listening to the interview, me and Carl were getting mad at each other about Patrick Waugh.
We continued that conversation, and things were said.
Carl was just, I believe at one point Carl said he was upset at me, and then a few minutes later he said he was frustrated with me. There was hurtful words going every which way.
I couldn't even define my emotions.
Yeah. My emotion.
All right, last matchup. Jonathan Goodrow versus Matthew Duchene. We know where I'm standing on this one. Joel.
Don't vote for anyone. If this ends in a 0-0 tie, I will sign a stick by Jimmy Vesey and send it to someone. But it has to end in a 0-0 tie.
I'll make sure that I do not vote until there's at least one vote, so I don't skew it.
Okay. Nobody vote.
All right, so...
You have to put that in the tweet, too, when you send it out. Joel says, nobody vote for this one.
We'll see how that works.
No, you have to.
Do I?
Yeah, because then it skews it if you don't.
Why do you want no one to vote?
Because neither of those guys should win, and if nobody votes, if it's a 0-0 tie, do you agree to wipe both of them out of the bracket? And the next guy wins just automatically.
So McDavid just advances onto the quarters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
0-0 tie.
Sure, 0-0 tie. No one wins, and we will just like... You just have to tweet at us or just say hi No. How do you want to do that then with that poll?
I don't know what we'll do.
How about this? If you retweet that poll and it has zero votes, like retweet that poll. If you interact with that poll, you're in the vote, in the pool for a Jimmy Vesey signed Fourth Line Podcast mini stick. And if there's zero votes.
There's zero votes. And if you're the person that's just like, I'm going to ruin this for everyone. Nobody likes you. Nobody likes that guy.
All right. So we have Jamie Benn versus Vladimir Tarasenko, Taves versus Kessel, McDavid versus both the Sedins, Goudreau versus Duchesne, and Jules, I hope no one actually votes for this matchup.
No, this is Goudreau and who's the other guy? I don't even remember. Duchesne. Goudreau and Duchesne versus whether people want a mini stick instead. I'm going to say people would rather a mini stick than Goudreau or Duchesne. That's what I think.
Interesting. Well, we will see what happens.
What we will see what happens is how Carl gets mad at me behind the scenes about how I told no one to vote for Matt Duchesne.
That's fair. People will vote and it will happen anyways.
So you're confident, you're giving no appeal for people to vote.
Yeah, because I don't need to. Someone will vote and then it doesn't matter.
And then everyone's going to vote.
Yeah. Once there's three votes on it, all bets are off. Once there's one vote, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, once there's one vote,
go ahead.
No mini stick.
Yeah, and that'll be in the tweet. Don't you worry.
This is gonna be a long tweet.
Yeah, we might run out of characters.
We're gonna have to Snapchat it and then pin it.
Yeah, it'll be check our Pinterest page for this poll. Head on over there. So, Joel, anything else you want to talk about this week, or should we wrap this guy up?
Really hot in my house. I want to go to sleep.
Okay. It's five o'clock your time.
I'm going to play baseball too, so
okay. Well, enjoy your game. Don't sleep.
Do we have a show next week?
I believe we do. There's a lack of a co-host next week, so we're trying to sort out what that looks like.
I'm here next week.
You're here next week.
Oh. It's the week after.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there's a show next week.
Did you know that we're going to be in the same room soon?
It's true. Yeah. Doing it face to face.
Yeah. You know what's weird?
No.
I haven't been in your house before.
Yeah, I've lived here for 3 years. You've yet to visit my house.
It's true. It doesn't sound like you're too worked up about it, but let me tell you, my mom is very upset that I haven't been in her house in 3 years.
That's a little different.
So I'm making the triumphant return to Calgary.
The prodigal son is back.
Yeah, we're going to tear it up.
In whatever way we do.
Oh, we do. Yeah. We do. Remember... This is all I got to say about how me and Carl tear things up. We had an event that was tagged by the local media as the greatest 7 days since creation.
And I challenge anyone to find that event.
It was a thing that we did.
That happened. We tore it up. Well, Joel, let's let the folks know where they can find these polls. Find us out on the old social media. We're on Twitter at the Fourth Line Pod with number 4, fourthlinepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thefourthlinepodcast, and at our brand new website, thefourthlinepodcast.com. You can also head over to Last Word on Sports for several, many great articles, hockey, football, baseball, and some great podcasts as well. We're also a member of the Tangent Bound Wicked Radio Networks.
There's wrestling on the Last Word on Sports.
Where you can find wrestling, they have wrestling podcasts. We are not the only podcast out there that talks about wrestling. There are ones that just talk about that. Sometimes those ones might talk about hockey.
I doubt it.
I didn't want to rule it out. I didn't want to put them in a box. No one likes to be put in a box, Joel.
Because we like sports.
Yeah.
We like fun things.
It's very true. Well, thank you guys for tuning in. We will be back next week with a co-host, Boom City.
Boom, Patrick Waugh.